Madras Mail, May 13, 1907. A woman in the village of Manor, near Dinapore, flames that had consumed her body, but not her clothes, that two constables had found the corpse in a room, in which nothing else showed signs of fire, and had carried the smoldering body, in the unscorched clothes, to the district magistrate. Toronto Globe, January 28, 1907. Dispatch from Pittsburgh, PA, that Albert Houck had found the body of his wife, burned to a crisp, lying upon a table, no sign of fire upon the table, nor anywhere else in the house. New York Sunday, January 24, 1930. Coroner's inquiry, at Kingston, NY, into the death of Mrs. Stanley Lake. Although her body was severely burned, her clothing was not even scorched. 14. The story of the mad bats of Trinidad is that the discoverer of them had solved a mystery of many deaths of human beings and cattle. Dr. Pavan, a Trinidad scientist, had discovered that the infection had been caused by mad vampire bats, affected by rabies, which they transmitted in a new form of insidious hydrophobia. But the existence of hydrophobia is so questionable, or of such rare occurrence, even in dogs, that the story of the mad bats of Trinidad looks like some more of the sensationalism in science that is so obtrusive today, and compared with which I am, myself, only a little wild now and then. It is probable that the deaths of human beings and cattle, in Trinidad, have not been accounted for. Once upon a time the explanation would have been witchcraft. Now it's rabid vampires. The old hag on her broomstick is of inferior theatrical interest, compared with the insane bloodsucker. The germ theory of diseases is probably like all other theories, ranging from those of Moses and Newton and Einstein and Brother Volava down, or maybe up, or perhaps crosswise, to mine, or anybody else's. Many cases may be correlated under one explanation, but there must be exceptions. No pure, or homogeneous, case of any kind is findable, so every case is variously classifiable. There have been many cases of ailments and deaths of human beings that have not been satisfactorily explained in the medical terms that are just now fashionable, but that will probably be out of style, after a while. Nowadays one is smug with what one takes for progress, thinking of old-time physicians prescribing dried toads for ailments. Here's something for the enjoyment of future smugness. Newspapers of January 14, 1932. Important medical discovery: dried pig stomachs, as a cure for anemia. I now have a theory of what is called evolution, in terms of fashions, that somewhere, perhaps on high, there is a Paris where, once upon a time, were dictated the modes in bugs and worms, and then the costumes of birds and mammals, grotesquely stretching the necks of giraffes, and then quite as unreasonably reacting with the repentance of hippopotami, passing on to a mental field of alternating extravagances and puritanisms, sometimes neat and tasteful, but often elaborate and rococo, with religions, philosophies, and sciences, imposing upon the fashion slaves of this earth the latest thing in theories. In the New York Sunday, January 17, 1930, Drive E.S. Godfrey, of the New York State Department of Health, told, in an interview, of mysterious deaths on a vessel. In a period of 4 years, 27 officers and men had been stricken by what was called typhoid fever. Taking his science from the Sunday newspapers, which had full-paged the story of Typhoid Mary, a scientific detective, with his microscope, boarded this vessel, and of course soon announced that he had tracked down one of the sailors, as a typhoid carrier. Such sleuthing has become a modernized witch-finding. There are, in New York State, today, persecutions that are in some cases as deadly as the witchcraft persecutions of the past. There are 188 women and 90 men recorded as typhoid carriers, in New York State. Why there should be twice as many women as men is plain enough. The carrier finders, with Typhoid Mary in mind, probably went looking for women. It may be a matter of difficulty, or it may be impossible, in times of general unemployment, for somebody in the grocery or dairy business, to change into some other occupation, but these 278 typhoid carriers, tracked down by medical Sherlock Holmeses, who had read of typhoid carriers, are prohibited from working in food trades, and have to report to district health officers once every 3 months. But this is for the protection of the rest of us. But that is what the witch finders used to say. Chivalry can't die, so long as there is tyranny, every tyrant has been much given to protecting somebody or something. It is one of the blessings of our era that we are tormented by so many abominations, enormities, and pestiferous, smaller boat rations that we can't concentrate upon the germ scares that the medical finders would spread, if it were not for so much competition. They did spread, with some success, with their parrot scare, in the year 1929. Abandoned parrots, in their cages, were found, frozen to death, in parks and doorways. Probably the psittacosis scare, of 1929, did not become the hysteria of former scares, because lay alarmists were checked by their inability to pronounce the name of it. There must be something the matter with the germ theory of diseases, or the nursing and medical professions would not be so overcrowded. There must be something the matter with the germ theory of diseases, if there is something the matter with every theory. I looked up the case of Typhoid Mary. With the preconceptions of everybody who looks up cases, I went looking for something to pick on. It was impossible for me to fail to find what I wanted to consider a case of injustice, if ours is an existence of justice and injustice. I of course found that the case of Typhoid Mary as a germ carrier was not made out so clearly as the finders of today suppose. In the year 1906, it was noted that in several homes, in New York City, where Mary had been employed as a cook, there had been illnesses that were said to be cases of typhoid fever. The matter was investigated, according to what was supposed to be scientific knowledge, in the year 1906. The germ theory of diseases was the dominant idea. Not a thought was given to relations between this woman and her victims. Had there been quarrels, before illnesses of persons, living in the same house with her, occurred. What was the disposition of the woman? There are millions of men and women, with long hours and little pay, who may, in their states of mind, be more dangerous than germs. There are cooks with grievances, as well as cooks with germs. But Mary's malices were not examined. It was found that, though immune herself, she was a distributor of typhoid bacilli. For 3 years she was detained in a hospital, by the public health officials of New York City. And then what became of Mary's germs? According to one examination, she had them. According to another examination, she hadn't them. At the end of 3 years, Mary was examined again, and, according to all tests, she hadn't them. She was released, upon promising to report periodically to the Board of Health. Probably because of lively impressions of detention, Mary did not keep her promise. Under various aliases, she obtained work as a cook. About 5 years later, 25 persons, in the Sloan Maternity Hospital, New York City, were stricken with what was said to be typhoid fever. Two of them died. See the Outlook, 109-803. And Mary was doing the cooking at the hospital. The public health officials detained her again, following their conclusion that they said was obvious. I know of hosts of cases that are obvious one way, and just as apparent some other way, conclusive, according to one theorist, and positively established, according to opposing theorists. She had them, when, to support a theory, she should have them. She hadn't them, when her own support, as detained, was becoming expensive. She hadn't, but it does seem that in some way this woman was related to the occurrence of illnesses, sometimes fatal. Of all germ distributors, the most notorious was Dr. Arthur W. Waite, who, in the year 1916, was an embarrassment to medical science. In his bacteriological laboratory, he had billions of germs. Waite planned to kill his father-in-law, John E. Peck, 435 Riverside Drive, New York City. He fed the old man germs of diphtheria, but got no results. He induced Peck to use a nasal spray, in which he had planted colonies of the germs of tuberculosis. Not a cough. He fed the old man calomel, to weaken his resistance. He turned loose hordes of germs of typhoid, and then tried influenza. In desperation, he lost all standing in the annals of distinctive crimes, and went common, or used arsenic. The old-fashioned method was a success. One's impression is that, if anything, diets and inhalations of germs may be healthful. It is not that I am attacking the germ theory of diseases as absolute nonsense. I do not attack this theory as absolute nonsense, because I conceive of no theory that is more than partly nonsensical. I have some latitude. Let the conventionalists have their theory that germs cause diseases, and let their opponents have their theory that diseases cause germs, or that diseased conditions attract germs. Also, there is room for dozens of other theories. Under the heading invalidism, I have noted 43 cases of human beings who were ill, sometimes temporarily, and sometimes dying, at the time of uncanny though rather common occurrences in their homes. No conventional theory fits these cases. But the stories, as collected by me, are only fragments. One day, in July, 1890, in the home of Mr. Pittock, in Hafer Road, Clapham, London, see the London Echo, July 16, 1890, the daughter of this household was dying. Volleys of stones, of origin that could not be found out, were breaking through the glass of the conservatory. It is probable that not a doctor, in London, in the year 1890 nor in the year 1930, if what is known as a reputable physician would admit any possibility of relationship between a dying girl and stones that were breaking windows.